Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence for Prince, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for at least the next hour on this July the 19th on the West Coast, now July the 20th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. And we certainly want to say hello to all the people listening to us on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world, especially those of you in the U.S. military or former U.S. military, and also those listening in on blogtalkradio.com. I got a very interesting email from Daryl Dickinson over at the Dickinson's Texas Longhorn Ranch in Barnesville, Ohio, and I thought I would read this to you. This is especially for those of you in the military. It's an email, so it's entitled Dumbest Statement Ever Made. And I'm reading the document now. I've got maybe a couple of comments to make afterwards. This has got to be the most outrageous statement ever made by a public official, let alone by the President of the United States. And this guy is our commander in chief. Here is his response when he backed off from his decision to require the military to pay for their war injuries. Bad press, including major mockery of the plan by comedian Jon Stewart, led to President Obama abandoning his proposal to require veterans carry private health insurance to cover the estimated $540 million annual cost to the federal government for treatment from injuries to military personnel received during their tours on active duty. The president admitted that he was puzzled by the magnitude of the opposition to his proposal. This is a quote from the president. "Look, it's an all-volunteer force," Obama complained. "Nobody made these guys go to war. They had to have known and accepted the risks. Now they whine about bearing the costs of their choice. It doesn't compute. I thought these were people who were proud to sacrifice for their country," Obama continued. "I wasn't asking for blood, just money. With the country facing the worst financial crisis in its history, I'd have thought that the patriotic thing to do would be to try to help reduce the nation's deficit. I guess I underestimated the selfishness of some of my fellow Americans." Now, there's an instruction in the email to pass this on to other people. I'm going to make this available to a number of people myself, and we will do that. Remember the statement. It goes on to say, "Nobody made these guys go to war. They had to have known and accepted the risks. Now they whine about bearing the costs of their choice." Well, my comment, unquote, my comment, first of all, we're not in these wars for the reasons that we're told. We're lied to. And they're going to complain about roughly a half a billion dollars a year to see to the needs of thousands and thousands, even millions of military personnel who risk their lives to do the job that they do. And they're underpaid as it is. And they're lied to about the reasons why they are in these wars to begin with. What would it cost healthcare for the military if they were here in this country, instead of going around guarding poppy fields in Afghanistan and murdering innocent women and children in Iraq and wherever else they decide that they want to take over a bank or steal some oil wells or just steal gold and the artifacts of antiquity? And he's got the guts, the gall, the unmitigated gall to complain about $540 million when in one fell swoop they gave $800 billion and then tacked on several more trillion to their banking cronies in Washington and New York and Germany and Switzerland and London. I'm sick of it, personally. That's my rant for the evening, and I hope it makes you sick. I hope you feel how incensed I am with this. Now, we're going to change to a lighter mood here, and we're going to invite two guests onto the show tonight. My regular Monday night guest hosts his own radio show on the Micro Effect Network. That's the microeffect.com. And his show is called The Story Behind the Story. I've also been a guest on his show. And, of course, he's had his show a lot longer than I've had mine. And also a good friend introduced to me by tonight's guest. First, we have Dr. A. Truat and Dr. Michael Castle. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Don. And good to be on with Dr. Mike. As always, we have a lively discussion. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, you could be a tad louder. I'm speaking rather forcefully. I'm fired up tonight. So.
Okay, well, you know, let me just bring some levity into the situation a little bit. It's
true.
There's a point to this, and I hope you bear with me. But I put this out, and I just emailed you a copy of this, Don, as well as CC to you, Dr. Mike. This is how to sell toothbrushes. Okay. This is a little down home homily, spinning going on here. But there's a point to this, so please bear with me. Today's Monday morning, right? This Monday morning, the grade school kids came back in to their homeroom class, and they were all very, very excited because they had a great weekend. The weekend assignment they had given on Friday was to sell something. And then give a short talk and show the class how much money they made. This is an entrepreneurial spirit by these fifth graders, ladies and gentlemen. And this is all about how to be a productive salesmanship, okay? Little Sally was on the front row. She jumps up and she says to the teacher in the class, "I sold Girl Scout cookies and I made $30," she said so proudly. "My sales approach was to appeal to the customer's civil spirit, and I credit that approach for my obvious success." Obviously, her mother wrote her little speech, okay? "Very good," said the teacher. And then next up was little Sally's friend Jenny. She said, "I sold magazines." She said, "I made $45, and I explained to everyone that magazines are important to keep them up on current events." "Very, very good, Jenny," said the teacher. And so they went around the room, and the troublemaker in the back, you know, little proverbial little Johnny, right? So you call little Johnny, and little Johnny runs up, and then the teacher has always held her breath. But little Johnny had a suitcase. Little Johnny walked to the front of the classroom and dumped a suitcase full of cash on the teacher's desk. "That's $2,467, he said. $2,467, cried the teacher. "What in the world were you selling?" "Toothbrushes," said little Johnny. "Toothbrushes," echoed the teacher. "How could you possibly sell enough toothbrushes to make that much money?" "Simple," he said. "I found the busiest corner in town. I set up a dip and chip stand and gave everybody who walked by a free sample. They all said the same thing. 'Hey, kid, this tastes like dog poop.' Then I would say, 'Well, it is dog poop. Want to buy a toothbrush?'" He said, "I use the government strategy of giving you something crappy for free and then making you pay to get that taste out of your mouth."
Yes, that tells the story. That's what's going on.
I can't possibly follow that. Hello, Don.
little Johnny, I mean to tell you, it's time to bring out the toothbrushes, ladies and gentlemen. But more importantly, it's time to say, hey, quit putting stuff in our mouth. Like you, Don, I'm tired of having people piss on my head and then tell me it's raining. These people, like you said in the first part of the show, I too received that email quite a while ago. The military is, let's say it what it is. There's no draft. There's not forcing anybody to go to war, but in a really very real way, they are with their economic conditions. You've got people in the inner cities of this great country that really have no other option to make anything at all of themselves, and so they get recruited right out of high school, join the military, see the world, and yeah, they realize, well, I can go serve some time and then come back, get a GI Bill, get my schooling paid for, and it's a great sales tool that these recruiters use for these kids, and so many of them are in broken families, welfare families in the inner cities. What do you expect? You know, what do you expect for these people? And yeah, they get injured, they come back, and the very least they should have their, you know, their expenses taken care of for selling them a bill of goods. Mm-hmm. So, shame on Obama for putting some poop on the dip. Okay.
Well, this is nothing but him paying back his cronies. You know, what else can you call it? And really, he's following someone else's orders. They're scrapping for any crumb that they can take away from the people. And we're going to expose some of that tonight. Hopefully.
Oh, huge! We're going to show you that that brown stuff on the chip is not the good stuff.
Yes,
no, true. I heard your show this evening, True, and I just say I'm never ceased to be stunned how far you guys take this thing up there, and it just, oh man, what a pillar of light that this is, you know. And there was a whole bunch of people listening. I'm certain of that.
Oh yeah. Well,
I feel bad that you know, I tell my guests, I send them out little notices saying, you know, don't use, you know, if you have to quote something, use some deleted, or, you know, say the F-bomb, you're gone. And so mm-hmm. I was just so saddened that Peter, you know, just quoting, he was reading a quote, but zero tolerance. They cut the board off. I was lucky to even get back on myself. They just won't put up with that. And unfortunately, you know, that happened.
Yeah, you have to sound the 1K tone. Beep. That's actually 500, you know, but it's an octave higher. That's what you got to do, and people will get the message.
But you know, it's funny. You know, here on talk radio, we can't do that type of stuff. The FCC has these strict enforcement. But then you know, every movie these days, even PG. I mean, come on, that's all part of our fabric anymore. It's a double standard in some ways, but I don't talk that way, and I don't want other people to talk that way either, but you know, sometimes it happens. Poop happens.
Just listen to any rap song. Only any media. Same thing.
You know, I did some research on who created the first rap song, by the way. Hmm. And it didn't come out of the ghetto, believe it or not. Rap music went way back. It's just that in that day they called it square dancing. So, anyway.
Oh, that's good.
Anyway, I'm going to, for about a minute and a half, I'm going to invite a very wise guest to the show. I'd like you gentlemen to listen to the words of Jim Pence. This is a piece that he put up on a video. It's called If I Was a Terrorist.
If I was a terrorist and I wanted to destroy the American way of life, I wouldn't use planes and bombs to kill folks. Hell's bells, that's too risky. You might get caught or killed or both. Real terrorists get results, and then they lay the blame where it can't be found. So here's what I would do if I was a terrorist. I would foreclose on millions of homes, you know, kick folks out of their houses. I would devalue the dollar so the price of everything would go up. I would outsource their jobs so they couldn't find work. I would move the factories to foreign countries, you know, all the good paying factory jobs. I would make education unaffordable. You know, terrorists don't like having educated people around. I would make health care difficult to get and let the insurance companies just get away with murder. I would listen to their telephone calls, monitor their emails, and use that information to really stick it to them. Then I would give myself a big old tax cut, sit back in luxury, and watch them fight over the crumbs. But you know what? We live in the United States of America. Thank you, Jesus. And the people that represent us would never, ever let them get away with that, would they? Would they?
Those are the words of James Spence.
Now, Don, what happened? Didn't you stop his storm from hitting? Was that lightning that hit us?
I wanted that one in there for dramatic effect.
Well, that was good. That was a good one.
Okay, we're going to start connecting some dots. You know what the neat thing, gentlemen, about being up here in my place in Idaho is it's so quiet and peaceful. I get up and I can really start doing some writing. Okay, my poison keyboard starts really chattering. I've got Beyond Ponzi, BP, Part 3.
Oh, and, my goodness.
And, Don, I tell you, you know, you've got the pieces together. I got your messages. Unfortunately, I don't have a way to return them unless I go about 10 miles up the road. And that's what I did to call you and contact you. But, let's connect some dots tonight, shall we?
Yes, let's do that. Now, shall we start with your Beyond Ponzi Part 3? Is that?
Well, yeah, let's jump in, and Dr. Mike can fill in and do color commentary here with you.
Well, I'll stand between two giants, and go ahead, Drew.
I'll be quiet and listen.
I started in on this after my guest got cut off on my show tonight, and I really have got to just kind of flesh it out and refine it with your input as well, Don. You know, everything has to have a flow of funds. We talked about the Joyce Foundation there in Chicago, how Barack Hussein Sotoro was one of the board members of that, and that basically means he decided largely. Was one vote to decide who got funded and where and how much, right? Well, what bank is involved in this Ponzi scheme, this Beyond Ponzi scheme? Well, you know, the Clintons had their Whitewater scandal. They had their Little Rock, Arkansas cabal. Many people died, organized crime, drug running, et cetera, et cetera. So, The Obama connection is a bank in Chicago called Shore Bank. Shore Bank. If you dig into that, Don, you find that Shore Bank was in deep trouble in the mid 2005, 2006. They had made they did a lot of foreign micro loans to speculators. But they lost their shirt in the subprime mortgages, like most banks did. In all intents and purposes, their financial statement would scream to be shut down and regulated. But no, they had friends in high places. They had Barry Sotoro, his wife. They had people in the Joyce Foundation to keep them going and keep the regulators from shutting them down. Also, they had connections to Goldman Sachs. Isn't that funny? Following British Petroleum's and Lord Brown's counsel, Shore Bank invested their bailout funds heavily into green businesses, solar panel manufacturing firms tied to British Petroleum, etc. Now, go back to in three of Obama's campaign speeches, he gave examples of ShoreBank being the iconic lending institution, because ShoreBank had, if they wanted to give business loans out, they had to pass, the companies had to pass what they call the ECO litmus tests. It was a new thing that Obama wanted to see happen in the banking reform. Okay, before we lend you money in business, can you pass the litmus test of ecology? In other words, what's your carbon credit or carbon footprint structure? All right, that's the basics of ShoreBank. Okay, now we see digging deep into ShoreBank, we see who's involved with that, and this is where it gets really fun, Don. let's see how far and how much this correlates to what you've already researched as well. One of the ShoreBank's co-founders is a person, a lady named Jan Piercy, P-I-E-R-C-Y. Lo and behold, she attended Wellesley College. Does that little college ring a bell for anybody, ladies and gentlemen?
Isn't that where Hillary Clinton went to
school? You got it. Bingo. Chinka, chinka, ching. Wellesley, not only is she, this is the same college, she was roommates with Hillary Clinton. Hillary, it was her blessed roommate, Jan Piercy. All right. Oh, is that funny? During the Wellesley College years, Hillary Clinton was deeply involved in some kind of shady shenanigans with the Black Panther anti-war type of movement, ladies and gentlemen. In fact, I interviewed one gentleman back in the 90s who was doing – he worked for a major newspaper. He was doing a story on these anti-war activists, and their – he went in to interview Ms., some of these people on the list, and he barged in and saw Hillary Clinton in bed with her roommate. Now, I don't know if that quite close. I don't mean
you were dropping out. I heard roommate, and then I didn't hear anything more until you got to the word close.
So. They were close without clothes, let's put it that way.
Oh, okay.
Another co-founder of ShoreBank, ladies and gentlemen, is a lady named Mary Houghton, H-O-U-G-H-T-O-N, Houghton. Guess what? Mary Houghton just happened to be a very, very close, personal close friend of Stanley and Dunham.
Hmm.
Yeah, isn't this just kind of funny? We have Houghton, we have Piercy, who's roommate, very close, kissing close of Hillary Clinton. We have Mary Houghton, Stanley Ann Dunham's very, very close friend. It was in the ShoreBank documents, Mary Houghton worked with Stanley Ann Dunham on foreign microloans for the Ford Foundation. Isn't that interesting, Don?
Now, were those in Africa by any chance?
Yeah, many of them were.
I know many were in the South Pacific region. However, recently I discovered a whole new train of microloan agents in the course of doing this research on the Gulf, by the way.
Yeah. Isn't this fun how we start following this rabbit trail and we come up with all these connecting points?
Mm-hmm.
It's not accidental. This is a Ponzi scheme of criminals, ladies and gentlemen. We're just identifying it here for you. Now, if little old Truott and little old Don Nikoloff and Mike Castle are smart enough to piece this together, where's our Justice Department? Where's our SEC? Are they asleep at the switch here, or are they part of the problem? Okay, Mary Houghton, guess what, Don? Not only is she intimate with Stanley Ann Dunham, but there at the Ford Foundation, guess who their liaison was?
Hmm.
Mr. Mr. Geithner, the father of Tim Geithner.
Oh, my goodness. And he ended up, was he at Goldman Sachs at that time?
No, he worked for the Ford Foundation.
Oh, okay.
Just but the Ford Tim Geithner, Tim Geithner was. This is Tim Geithner's father.
Yeah.
Isn't this just interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Incredible.
Okay.
Now, was Stanley Ann Dunham going by that name or Sophia Maduna? That's the big question.
Stanley Ann Dunham was what she was officially going by.
Okay.
But she did have aliases. Yeah.
Yeah. Her, by the way, just for the listening audience out there, Stanley Ann Dunham's yearbook from Mercer Island High School on Mercer Island, Washington, had her signature in many notes that she wrote to people. And I got, believe it or not, they stole the books from the library. Somebody did. And it so happened that it was when the campaign trail made its swing around the Seattle area. All of a sudden, those yearbooks from the library and the high school all disappeared. But she signed her name Stanley. She didn't call herself Stanley Ann or Ann, just Stanley.
Stanley.
And that signature does not match the forgery of what's alleged to be a registration in a Jakarta school.
Really?
She didn't write her S's that way. She didn't detach her letters like that signature is detached. And that's written on a piece of graph paper turned over. In Indonesian, on the back, it says scores, points on the top.
Oh.
Okay. That's in my Three Stooges Go to Washington article, by the way.
She's a scorer. Yeah. Well, you know what happened? You know what happened when I got those pictures from my CIA source? Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Her asset number, all of that.
YA438.
Yeah. My site was shut down and hacked. And I had no choice but to get that. I would never have a website again. Oh yeah. Well, you can't put naked pictures up on the internet. Your numbers can't do that, Don. Didn't know that you knew that.
Well, those are posted on many sites.
Yeah, now.
For several years.
Yeah.
For several years.
But I guess not family sites. I run a family site. Little kids can access my site, I guess. No, okay. It gets even better. Let's get juicy now, shall we? Shore Bank, one of the other founders was a guy named Ronald Grzywinski. He was a very, very close friend and cohort of President Jimmy Carter. We're seeing a lot of liberal Democrats surfacing here. The former Shore Bank VP was a man named Bob Nash, okay. Does that ring any bells to you, Don? Bob Nash?
That name is very familiar. In fact, it seems like that name came up sometime around Richard Nixon, too.
Well, he's a deputy campaign manager of Hillary Clinton's presidential bid.
Okay.
Okay, that's he's also on the board of the Chicago Law School. Okay, the board of the Chicago Law School also includes Barack Obama and Bill Ayers. Remember Bill Ayers?
Mm-hmm. The author or the alleged author behind the scenes of Dreams for My Father, Weather Underground.
Yeah, to jog your memories, ladies and gentlemen, Bill Ayers, he's a professor at the University of Illinois, Chicago still. He founded something called the Weather Underground. The Weather Underground. Just do a Google search, Weather Underground. We're not talking about storm fronts, ladies and gentlemen. Weather Underground. This is it's a radical terrorist revolutionary group. I like what your that little clip you played, Don. Yes, indeed. This Weather Underground are terrorists, and they're eco-terrorists and finance terrorists. Exactly right. You want to cripple America? You want to terrorize America? Take them out financially.
What I'm jealous of is James Pence was able to get all that out in about a minute and 24 seconds, and we've been doing it for years.
Well, pence, six pence, I guess is what you ought to call that. It's worth a dollar, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
So Bill Ayers, here we know, he admits to bombing buildings in the 60s and 70s, ladies and gentlemen. And he, to this day, says they deserve to die, those who were killed. He escaped a lifetime in jail on a technicality. And he's completely a Marxist socialist and the comrade of Barry Sotaro, a.k.a. the long-legged Mac Daddy.
And his partner, Bernadine Dorn, is teaching law at Northwestern University.
So can you get a picture of this cabal, ladies and gentlemen? These are the people that are taking care of the Gulf of Mexico. Okay, listen up, listen closely. So Obama sits on the board of the Joyce Foundation. We're talking Senator Obama now, and he, if you look at the projects that he represented, where he funneled hundreds of thousands of charity dollars, well, we find that one of these huge charity grants went to a guy named John Ayers, and guess what? I did some digging. John Ayers, you got it, the brother of Bill. Okay, John Ayers, he has this education fund project that the Joyce Foundation gave him many hundreds of thousands of dollars on. And he's the brother of Bill Ayers, the known terrorist.
I'm glad you clarified that, because when you said John Ayers, I was thinking of a ladies singing group, an R&B group that was with Motown, but that's somebody else. The John Ayers.
And, you know, it just everybody that's involved in Shore Bank, it seems like, you know, okay, who's this guy? Let's do some digging on this guy. Well, another fellow, the board member of Shore Bank, is a guy named Howard Standback. Standback. S-T-A-N-B-A-C-K. He, Don, is the former chairman of the board of something called the Woods Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
The Woods Foundation also lists that Barack Obama and Bill Ayers, the terrorists, were also on the same exact board of the Woods Foundation. Okay, dig deeper. We find that Standback was employed by New Kenwood Incorporated. Does that ring any bells to you, Don? New Kenwood Inc. is a real estate development company co-owned by none other than Tony Resco.
Yes.
Remember?
Yes.
Tony Resco, ladies and gentlemen, is the guy, if you don't remember your news clips, and most people don't, that's okay. Tony Resco was the guy who gave Barack Obama the sweet deal, the amazing sweet deal on his new house, Obama and Michelle. Okay, before this, Resco's law firm of Davis, Minor, Barnhill, and Galland, they represented Resco's company and basically helped him get $43 million in funding for redevelopment. Guess who was the lawyer who did this for Resco? Yes, indeed, Barack Obama. That's how Chicago politics works, ladies and gentlemen. That's how sweet deals are made. All right, you want to keep going? Spinning? Are we spinning out of control yet?
No, not yet. Color commentary from Dr. Castle.
No, I'm just listening intensely, gentlemen. It's just the thing that you're knitting together here, which is really dark and sticky. You know, it's like there's another pile up that direction. It's just like piles of dung everywhere you go. It's just
it's the same
creeping crud, you know, same thing.
It's on a Tostito chip ready to be given to you. Okay. Now, like I said, we don't want to break out the toothbrushes yet. We want to just expose that this stuff on the chip is not good. All right.
Well, okay. Can I add also that it's not from ducks; it's from herons.
Okay.
I guess it could be from a duck, but.
Okay. True.
Keep going. Yeah.
Can you please.
Pate, mom. All right. let's go to Adele Simmons. I mean, where do these Shore Bank guys come from? Adele Simmons, the director of Shore Bank, happens to be a close friend of Valerie Jarrett. She's the White House senior advisor to Obama, right? Simmons and Jarrett, again, there's the connection to Shore Bank. There's another board member named Van Jones. Van Jones is the marketing director for Green, for all the Green projects. He holds a senior advisor position for Black Studies at Princeton University. And if you remember back, Mr. Van Jones was appointed, he's the czar for green jobs at the White House. He's appointed in 2009 special advisor for green jobs at the White House. But he was forced to resign because somebody did their vetting correctly and found out he was a complete Marxist and was tied to the Weather Underground again. All right? All right. All of this is the central stage. These are the players, ladies and gentlemen, in this drama. And as you find out that their biggest project, why they were bailed out, why Shore Bank was bailed out, is because they were they're the bank that is established with the Joyce Foundation to handle the Chicago Climate Exchange, the CCX. Are you listening, ladies and gentlemen? Now let's turn our spotlight now on Al the globe is warming Gore. Okay, he's one of the small players here, but it was Al Gore who came with these other players at Shore Bank and funded the Chicago Climate Exchange. I'm sorry, established the Chicago Climate Exchange funded by the Joyce Foundation. Okay. Now, Al Gore also founded a company he called the General Investment Management, GIM. And it's registered in London, England, ladies and gentlemen. GIM, of course, is tied at the hip with the UK-based Climate Exchange, PLC, which is on the London Stock Exchange now. Okay, so we've got the UK-based Climate Exchange PLC, which issues carbon credits in Europe, and we have the Chicago Climate Exchange in Chicago handling North America, Canada, Mexico. All right, now, we're getting the stage set here enough because you're talking, I'm going to really, really lower the boom here because I'm glad this is going on the record. It's got to go into the archives and taped, and people's got to come back and listen to this, and hopefully law enforcement will too. The co-founder with Al Gore of the Generation Investment Management, GIM, is none other than a guy named Hank Paulson. Hank Paulson is the former United States Treasury Secretary under Bushy, and former CEO of Goldman Sachs. Okay, but guess what? Guess where Hank Paulson's wife, Wendy, graduated from and is a trustee of? Any ideas?
Wellesley
College! Yeah! Yeah, the same little college that Hillary Clinton and her cohabitating roommate, Jan Piercy, co-founder of Shore Bank, attended. Ladies and gentlemen, they're all very close.
Now, was she rooming alone, do you know?
I'm sure they were in the same sorority. That's how close these three are. These are the three witchcraft witches. I'm telling you, these are third-degree witches, all of them. Interesting? Are you interested, ladies and gentlemen? Okay. Now, here's the reality, the sad reality. Here is the pâté on the chip that they want to give you like it's all a good thing, ladies and gentlemen. The carbon tax credit, the carbon exchange bill that's already passed the House is just trying to be rammed through the Senate. They have a window. They have to have this thing done before the November elections because I don't think they'll have a snowball's chance after November. Okay, this whole thing in the Gulf, absolutely no doubt about it, is a gambit to use as a terror mechanism, fear mongering, to get people to really pressure for the cap and trade. It's people like us that are exposing this that'll stop it. I think it's already starting to make an effect on.
Mm-hmm. Now, okay. Would you like me to connect some dots?
Well, yeah. Before we go there, I've calculated what's happening here, and I did this just, and this is conservative. This is really conservative. And when we're talking about, you know, why Truot's phones have been tapped and bugged, and why I've been attacked. Well, this is why. It's a huge, huge, huge money coming out here. Okay, I can't hardly just imagine it. All right, let me just give a real quick primer on how the climate exchange will operate, okay, if I can. Ladies and gentlemen, when the bill passes, every business, every household, every person on the census will be given a carbon footprint analysis, okay? That's your quota. It's only a Marxist socialist brain could come up with this control, okay? Once you're given your carbon footprint, you're regulated monthly, weekly, daily to see how much you're consuming of your carbon, of the Earth's precious resources. I'm serious.
I know it sounds so insane.
It is. And so at the end of the reporting period, if you've exceeded your carbon footprint, if you're too flatulent, I don't know. There's flatulence does in fact play into this. They have a whole gauge for cattle farmers, okay? Cuz cattle flatulence adds into the carbon footprints. I kid you not. So they subjectively make an analysis. Oh, Truot, you've driven too much to Idaho. You've run your boat X number of days. We all know this because Shore Bank, through the banking cartel, we know all of your transactions on your credit cards, your debit cards. We know what your lifestyle is. We know, you know, Big Brother is really watching you. Guess what? You've exceeded your carbon credit by X numbers. Either you pay the fine and penalty, or you go buy a carbon exchange extra credit. Because see, there's people, unlike Truot, who are good stewards of the environment. They're riding their bikes. They're, you know, staying home, running their windmills. They got solar panels. They're doing all the right things. So their carbon footprint is so low, they've got excess, and guess what? They've sold it to our carbon exchange. Now you can buy it. You can buy their carbon exchange, but we just brokered for you. Okay, here's how it works, ladies and gentlemen. They estimate that the Chicago Climate Exchange, once this bill passes, a conservative estimate is $10 trillion will be traded there. $10 trillion of carbon value. Now, there's a 4% commission rate built into the owners, the founders, the Joyce Foundation founders of the CXX. Commission rate of only 4%. If you can, $10 trillion. Put that into your computer calculator, like I did, 10 trillion. Okay, that's a lot of zeros. But times it times 0.04, which is 4%, and you see that $400 billion will be split between the owners, all Obama cronies. Obama, Hillary, and Gore.
Which is why I call what they're calling cap and trade crap and fade.
That's right. And then that's 4% of the CXX. But guess who brokers? The brokerage firm is none other than Goldman Sachs, ladies and gentlemen. Goldman Sachs bought a 10% share of CXS for $26 million. They own 10%, cost them $26 million. At 2% rate, Goldman Sachs would rake in, do the math, yeah, $200 billion each year. Now, wait a minute, wait a minute. That's just the North American exchange based in Chicago. We factor in the European exchange and Al Gore's GIM. You see what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
These racketeers, these beyond Ponzi scum, do the math to add up the shore bank. Now, that's the commission on the CXX. The bank in charge of this is Shore Bank. Shore Bank will have $10 trillion flowing through its accounts. That equates out to I calculate, about a $40 billion in interest, nominally, for its owners. And I gave you a list of who the owners are.
Now, along with that, let me add something. I happen to know from my research, and I find this all over the country, is that there are a group of realty consortiums or real estate investors that get together and they buy up a piece of property, and then they convince the local authorities, and they almost do this with an iron fist. Under the auspice of the Western Land Conservancy, they privatize publicly owned lands, and they pool these lands in all their other investments, derivatives, hedge funds. So they're talking about carbon credits, and they're collecting farm subsidies, because a lot of this is farming land, and it ties in again with Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs is running that, and I had Adrian Salbucci on the show last Friday, and he talked about Henry Paulson from Goldman Sachs, although he didn't specify if he was with Goldman Sachs at the time or with the U.S. Treasury, but I'm led to conclude that it could have been iffy either way. But they started what's called the Conservancy Foundation in Argentina, doing the same thing I'm describing, taking public or privately owned land, saying, you know, we have to preserve this nature here by this river or the forest here, and we're going to make this a safe zone, an ecologically protected area for endangered species. And they can say they're trying to save the long-horned mosquito, or, you know, something to that effect. And they'll raise the money, and they'll take that money and take over the property and invest that money into their pool. That money doesn't go to supporting anything on the property. And meanwhile, these guys, many of them are attorneys and real estate agents and people in the title industry. They're consolidating all the title companies. They're consolidating the surveying companies. They're trying to federalize the whole thing under one department. And every time they write up a piece of property, do a survey, do the paperwork, all these attorneys are charging fees for this, you see, and they're just recycling this money. So this is money that's really coming out of our pockets while they're stealing everything.
Yeah, see, this is an intrusive piece of legislation. The question is, will it pass? Yeah, it's close. There's like three or four swing votes right now. Again, it's all on the momentum of the BP problem. This is such a scandal, a heist. It makes Bernie Madoff look like a Sunday school picnic. I got to tell you, it's probably the biggest illegal heist in world history. That's why I called so vociferously on my show. We got to get this guy indicted, this guy, this usurper in the White House, and all of his cronies, including Secretary of State Hillary Witch Clinton. These people have got to be exposed. Al Gore as well. And lock him up.
Now,
it's bad enough that they got this infrastructure done.
Wouldn't you say that Goldman Sachs is controlled by the Rothschilds?
Yeah, no doubt about that. No doubt about that. And so is BP.
Yeah. So there are some silent names behind all of this to an extent, but when we start connecting dots, all of a sudden the name Bush or Cheney comes into play, Rumsfeld, all the old schoolmates from the University of Chicago, again, the ones that studied all these legal strategies with Leo Strauss. And there's another example right there. You can get into Saul Alinsky Quigley, Carol Quigley.
Mm-hmm.
These are all the same socialist, communist, Zionist ideologies. You can put labels on them, but they're doing the same thing regardless.
And it's all about just really sucking the last wealth out of the pockets of the common people, the little people. As BP calls them, the little guys, the small people. Come on, ladies and gentlemen, this has got to stop. This.
Here, here, I'll second that motion for indictments for all of them.
That's right. Lock them away. I hate to say this, but I think they got to just test the laws of thermodynamics. Dr. Mike and I talked about this on Friday's show. What really happens at gas and noxious crud at 5,000 feet deep? Let's experiment and see. Let's convict these guys. Let's tie them to a submersible cap, you know, and see how it implodes at 5,000 feet deep.
Yes.
You
know.
With core exit. Too.
Of course.
Season it real good.
Marinate them in it.
Baste them with it. Yeah.
Yeah, be sure and throw that Commander Allen in there with a bunch, too.
I'd like to connect some dots here, gentlemen, on the basis of what you shared, Dr. Ott. I exposed a lot of this information on Drew Rain's show and this afternoon, in fact. And it was heard by people all over the world, and you would have been very, very heartened by the response that we got from people over in Russia who heard what I had to say. We have this Ponzi scheme that you've identified and I've identified from different angles, but we've come to the same conclusion that this is about raising money. This is about making money. The put options is part of it. The core exit is part of it. And this issue with the carbon credits is part of it. And so much more behind the scenes. But the history of how this whole thing evolved, if I just give out a few dates, and this is all off the top of my head. I'm not working from notes or anything. But on the basis of what you've shared, watch how the dots connect.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to go full circle, all right? And they're going to match, basically, they're going to fit into the pathway that you've already established with this information. March 3rd of 2009, BP begins drilling the Deep Horizon well in the Tiber oil field in the Gulf of Mexico. By September 1st, 2009, they make an announcement that they drilled down to 35,055 feet, and they learned that there's at least 3 billion barrels of oil. The news starts coming out. They start advertising it, promoting it, getting the word out to anybody who's going to want to jump on it. And then they say 4 to 6 billion barrels of oil. Now, how they can come to that conclusion and go through what we're going through right now, the figures don't match. There's far more oil than what they're claiming, regardless of how much of it is actually spewing out into the Gulf of Mexico. Now, simultaneously, while this is going on, and March 3rd is the day they start drilling the well. Just before that, February of 2009, and remember, we're talking about 2009 so far, these dates. February of 2009, two employees of Citadel Investments in Chicago leave the company. They talked about starting up their own trading company, and Citadel handles hedge funds, and they're very good in the high-frequency trading market. They appear to be doing everything above board, and they keep making a consistent 50% profit while others are losing. Others are losing up to 40% across the board. So they are considered to be a competitor of Goldman Sachs. And Ken Griffin runs that company, and as far as I know, up until these two employees left, there was really no big questions about the integrity of the people that work for the company, at least based on publicity, okay, and what little bit there is about the inner workings of a bank or a hedge fund company, an investment firm. Now, the two individuals, Mikhail Malyshev, I have determined has just merely stolen a name that belongs to a Russian manager at Adobe Systems in Russia, and has been for some time, and can't really see anything untoward about his character and the way he does business. I do have some questions about Adobe because of some things that have happened to a few friends in the email, but that's another story. The second Mikhail Malyshev is listed as being on the Russian Defense Department of Defense and is an engineer with the European Space Agency. He looks nothing like the Michael Malyshev that worked for Citadel. Now, he left, and the day after he left, Jace Kollmeyer, allegedly from Kansas, we have a third Kansas person. What does that tell you? Wizard of Oz all over again. Jace Kollmeyer is not from Kansas, as far as I can tell, and he is attributed to be a computer science and mathematics major from Kansas State University. Received a scholarship. I'm not sure how he paid for his graduate studies, but let's assume that maybe he didn't have graduate studies. Maybe he received his training overseas, maybe with the Sayeret Mahtal or the Technion University, someplace like that, in Israel. Now, I don't know that for certain, but I tell you, it appears that all the arrows are starting to point in that direction. You mentioned Princeton University, someone who was basically didn't cut the mustard and was removed from his position. Well, Malyshev allegedly got a physics degree from Purdue fans, Boilermakers, Princeton. He got a PhD in plasma physics, and he goes on to work at Citadel running their high-frequency trading program. It just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense how somebody who would go so far as to get a doctorate in plasma physics would do that kind of work. Just absolutely makes no sense, unless they were investing in plasma-based weapons or particle beam weapons or something along that line. Then that's a different picture. Now, Jace Kollmeyer was giving lectures in physics after he left Kansas State University, again at Princeton. He ends up there. The alleged wife of the rogue Goldman Sachs vice president of equity strategy, Sergei Alenikov, who was living in New Jersey in Little Falls, and his wife, Alina, who also has an alias, Bartz, a deceased woman in Massachusetts. She's using that alias as a name. She was teaching at Princeton University, or so they say. She's on the faculty. But if you Google her name and try to find something out about her background, she allegedly went to school at a school, MIIT, with Sergei, her husband, and that school doesn't exist. Our Russian listeners told us that this afternoon. There is no such place as the Moscow Institute of Technology. So, what is this picture doing there on the website? No story, no explanation. His picture and two email addresses. And in fact, everybody is a picture and email addresses on this list, and they say graduates on the list. The title of the paper is Graduates. So this is a list of spies pretending that they're Russians. Okay? I came to the conclusion that Alenikov was nothing but a spy. In fact, they gave him the alias of someone who's quite a bit younger than him when they brought him out to do his work. They claim he was in the United States now 19 years. And he was charged with uploading software that he allegedly stole from Goldman Sachs to a German website, which was owned by someone in the UK. All right. Now you wonder, is that somebody affiliated with BP or is it just a bank? Did Goldman Sachs actually email the codes and allow Alenikov to be the fall guy, because we're talking about a spy that's working as a vice president at Goldman Sachs, earning $400,000 a year. And his wife also teaches at Princeton, where Kohlmeier was teaching and where Malyshev allegedly got a PhD. This is too coincidental. And she taught allegedly at the University of Pennsylvania, and Kohlmeier's wife allegedly taught at the University of Pennsylvania. And these people are all into physics and microbiology. You see, that's the new market. That's the new big ticket item. It has been for a few years, ever since Reagan was in the presidency and the Promis software was stolen. I think the software they're actually algorithms, and 9/11, Daniel Lewin from MIT and Akamai Technologies was allegedly creating these algorithms at the Technion School in Haifa, Israel. And he worked for IBM Haifa as well. I find that interesting because a lot of people I know that worked at IBM didn't even know there was such a place in Haifa, Israel. So we have the numerical codes that were used for the 9/11 put options coming out of Israel. And I would suspect that these are the same codes, just being used in a different way, and that Malyshev and Kohlmeier were coerced, or it's just part of their plan to have them infiltrate Citadel and leave after a period. He'd been talking about leaving for 2 years and counseling even with the company's attorney to make it look like it was all genuine, all sweet and above board, warm and fuzzy. And they even sued, besides Malyshev and Kohlmeier, Jace Kohlmeier, they also sued Matthew Heiner, who is the corporate attorney. And he even allegedly made a comment, if you guys do this, if you start up this company before your non-competitive period of 9 months has transpired, then they're going to sue you. Well, they even sued the attorney. Now, what is interesting is Alenikov, after being offered a job for $1.2 million from Teza, this is the story, three times his salary at Goldman Sachs, now he's just going to set up this program for them and make three times the money on a company that hasn't made a penny and is in violation of their agreement with Citadel while they're still on their pay period for leaving the company. They leave a day after each other, and then Alenikov comes, gets a job, and as he flies back to New Jersey, the FBI arrests him. Why did they wait? Now, there are conflicting stories. They say he left the company, Goldman Sachs, April of 2009. They also, the FBI says he left June 5th of 2009. And he's arrested July 3rd, 2009. Why would anyone wait more than a day if he stole millions and millions of dollars worth of codes? You know where they do some of these codes on the basis of what I see, the pattern? They do them at Princeton. They do them at the University of Pennsylvania. Now, and quite likely Montclair College. That's where Alenikov's wife was teaching. I may have misspoken, said Princeton. We have the two men from Teza allegedly studying at Princeton. Now, you know what? Kollmeyer lectured. He was lecturing on physics. But he was a computer and math major, computer programming. This was his big deal. But he's lecturing on physics. And I'm saying, you know, he's listed on a schedule. Lecture number 7, it was. And when you check the credentials or look at the faculty records at the schools, Alina Alenikov is listed in the computer sciences and mathematics department as a full-time faculty member, but she's uncategorized, doesn't have a phone, doesn't have an email address, but she has a room number, and it's the same room number as all the other uncategorized people. One of the administrators, I ran his name, and he's working for a hedge fund firm in New York. He's not there in the school administrating. These people are doing the research. This is the money, if any, is being spent, the money that's being invested in producing these programs. Now, let's fast forward. June 6th, Teza learns that Alenikov was arrested for this alleged crime or series of crimes against Goldman Sachs, and they suspend him. They suspend him. All right, if you're going to buy that, then you're going to buy the rest of this. They suspend him, and they're approached by the media, and they bring forth a man who represents a PR firm, Res Publico, from Chicago. Man that headed that organization used to be a speechwriter for an Illinois state senator and was an advisor to Rod Blagojevich and some other happy campers in the Chicago area. His name was Guy Ciparoni. Guy Ciparoni was asked what Teza's position was on having hired Alenikov and learning about this. And he sort of smoothed it out. They had nothing to do with this. This was something that Alenikov did on the side. I'm paraphrasing it. But then there's another instance where the same individual shows up. And this is when they had actually interviewed a Washington crisis management official from an organization that basically helps other corporations or clients deal with crisis management of a huge nature. And Desenhall was the man's name. I don't have his first name on the tip of my tongue, but he said, this is bigger than a PR problem. They can't be pushing people around. They have to be above board. They can't. These scams have to end and these schemes and all of this questionable stuff. And this is over the SEC's complaint about the misleading subprime mortgage issues that caused the market to crash. Again, this is about embezzlement. But they're going to treat this like, well, this was shady dealing and they were misleading people about the nature of their investments. And these were derivatives and hedge funds. Who do they go to after? This is Reuters. After they go to this firm in Washington, they go to Chicago and they interview Guy Ciparoni. This is regarding Goldman Sachs' position. There is a connection between Teza and Goldman Sachs. And I've said it from the beginning. that it appeared to me that Alenikov was just a scapegoat, just to actually draw attention to something. He's not going to be prosecuted for this. He was arrested for the FBI. They're going to end up saying, oh, no, there was no harm done. But then we don't really know that that's what actually occurred, do we? That's the cover story, because what they did was to put options on April 20th. And there were 11 firms that lost a lot of money. Citadel lost something in the neighborhood of, I'm going to say, 24,895 shares of BP stock and about 150,000 shares of Transocean stock. That's a lot. But there were some other companies. Blue Rock Advisors had 3,027,093 shares of BP and about 2 million shares of Transocean. They took a big hit. And there were some other companies with amounts close to that. Out of the 11 companies, 4 had both of the stocks. Some had BP and some had Transocean in the remaining 7. But you're talking huge amounts of money. And the bottom line is, when somebody is betting on it going down and they're going to make a lot of money, somebody who's holding on to the stock is going to lose a lot of money. And that's what happened. Then you have this event that goes on that probably prevents some kind of investigation into this, but this is the investigation, isn't it true?
Oh, yes.
Now, I appreciate you listening and all that. There's a heck of a lot more, but that connects the dots. That comes full circle. The key is the res publico. Oh, by the way, Guy Ciparoni also represented all of Tony Resco's businesses, too.
There you go.
As a PR agent. Feel like the evident footprints are doubling up on each other now?
Yeah, I'm just I'm following the links also to Wellesley College, and I mean it's funny how you see their links to Harvard and MIT. Wellesley College, ladies and gentlemen, it's a women's liberal arts college. There's only 2,400 women there and 2,300 enrolled each year. Or totally, but you look at the who's who of these women, and again, it ties in, shall we say, to the seven sisters, the occultic structures. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh golly.
Now consider this true.
Just down the road is Salem, Massachusetts, the witchcraft headquarters of the world. And you get women that are involved in these covens, ladies and gentlemen, that go on to lead Fortune 500 companies. Just the who's who of graduating witches from Wellesley, the Witches of Wellesley. Oh, let's write a screenplay.
I was going to try to solicit some color commentary here from Dr. Mike.
No.
You've heard two different accounts that seem to be connecting dots, you know.
Oh, well, yeah, and all I can say is that the listening audience out there, I just hope is, in fact, at some level of law enforcement in this United States, that they, in fact, even if it's the good people that are still with the Federal Bureau of Investigation, in fact, immediately look into these that you're putting on the table, because every single one of these topics that you gentlemen have discussed this evening, every single one of them fits perfectly into this scenario that builds up, and it's to the Gulf, to the catastrophe that happened down there. But look, it's going right up to the podium of where they're going to pass this cap and trade, and they're going to have to do it before November. You've got the story. There it is. I just ask that if there are still decency left in the U.S., Federal Bureau of Investigation or Attorney Generals of the states, they need to jump right into this and start looking at listing of warrants, in fact, for indictments, because every single bit of this is traceable, and neither of you, in fact, has manufactured one single story or sentence in any of this. Not one thing did you make a presumption on. And look at the Dom, you and I have been talking about this on the phone all week. And how many times, in fact, did we say, man, I wish they would give up on the phone and quit clicking. They would just click because Don was saying some things, ladies and gentlemen, that it's just there's no way that dots can line up like that in such perfect uniformity, just the same way with what Dr. Oz talking about. It leads into such uniformity. But see, all that has happened is of no concern. It is strictly a sacrifice, and it's a sacrifice that, in fact, that they're laying on all living things in the United States, but it's actually the entire world. It's time for if we have law enforcement of civility and still of laws in this world, now is their time to come to our help, because this is when we need it. We need to go forward with this story as being one of the most grandiose, wicked things that not even the best novel writer could write something this concise and this, you know, because it's just wanton. Everything is just done out of nothing more than an absolute wash-up of Lucifer and the sign of the serpent. Everything is given for that. What is wrong with these people that they've got that kind of lust insanity? It's just money. No matter what kind it is, it's just money. What is so? There's got to be something else, and I think that's in fact what both in fact sides of this coin, this that you're describing this evening. That's why this story in fact has so much validity, because it in fact goes way beyond that. It's the power and the control to kill us, to kill every living thing. If they choose.
Yeah, where are their concerns about things green now while this is going on, you see? No, penalize the people. You know, this is the cost of doing business, or this is the cost of setting up a Ponzi scheme. So yeah. What if we kill animals in the sea and plants, and we take the source of nourishment to billions of people away from them? Who cares about that? We have our blood repositories. And we make our sacrifices. We drink, and I'm just talking about blood drinking sacrifices. We don't need to.
Well, it goes back to the occultic symbolism of green. I mean, it's the highest Luciferian color. The green man edifices, the witchcraft Wicca. High orders are all green. They just wear their green aprons.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Mike, you know what I'm talking mm-hmm. about with that.
Well, they have Dr. Green and their Dr. Green bomb too.
Yeah. The British Petroleum changing Lord John Brown changing the logo to the green sun symbol, the Helios, going back to Greek mythology once again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just, you know, you have the Cerberus connection, the three-headed dog guarding the gates of hell. You got the same players tied into Wellesley College, which, you know, I mean, to tell you, it's right there in Salem, Massachusetts, ladies and gentlemen, the home of witchcraft. Is this all coincidental? I don't think so.
And don't forget, all of this is connected already to those 13 families, including the Rothschilds. All this fact is in fact going to be their absolute empire, they think. Yeah. One of these days, that ain't going to happen.
Okay, go ahead.
The Wikipedia entry for Wellesley shows that they have only 2,300 students, but get this. They have an annual budget endowment of over $1.3 billion. Where does this money come from? 2,300 divide $1.63 billion a year endowment. $1.63 billion divide that by 2,300 students.
They get a few people, elderly people who have life insurance policies. And are healthy enough to live a few years and not commit suicide, and they pool that money. That money funds the professors with tenure. It funds all the various programs, and they get a cut out of this too. It's a kickback. School doesn't keep all that money.
The entry says, quote, Wellesley has graduated more female directors of Fortune 500 companies than any other college in the country, bar none.
Oh, there you go.
Isn't that amazing? Well, okay. Send your daughter to Wellesley, but be sure to pack your pointed hat and a broomstick. I'm sorry, but I mean, knowing what I know about Salem, Massachusetts, and that whole enclave there, and Wellesley is right there. I mean, oh well. You know, I have eyewitnesses from people that have come forward that have seen Hillary and her roommates, you know, in these high rituals, ladies and gentlemen. Peter Chernoff, my guest tonight on my show. Others have, you know, she is who she is. She's a third degree witch. And they learned their craft. They perfected their craft at Little Wellesley, ladies and gentlemen. That's all. I mean, I'll say that. I'll let it lay. I hope it won't jump on its broom and fly away. But with no. That, we're fast approaching the witching hour here in.
Well, regarding the characters I named, specifically all these characters with these Russian-sounding names, I submit that these are likely Mossad agents, and they're playing various roles. You know, I found some really interesting aliases for Mrs. Alenikov. She goes in allegedly in Russia. Her name was Julia Korogatsky, and she went to the same school that did not exist or does not exist and never existed that Sergei Alenikov allegedly went to. So when you start comparing notes from one side to the other, these may not even be husband and wife. These are just two people posing as husband and wife. They sure did a lot of traveling around the world to do their Lawrence Welk style dancing. The only thing that was missing was the champagne bubbles. I don't know that they won any of these competitions, but I think these competitions were nothing more than a smokescreen for exchange of information and more spying. That's all it is. The most ruthless people on the planet, and it's a toss-up, I guess, between the oil cartel and the banking cartel and the pharmaceutical cartel. But the most ruthless people that I have seen are the ones that fund these organizations, that take the time to train these people to infiltrate a country and buy off the politicians to allow this to even occur. It's done so secretly, or it's done under the guise of attending a school. This guy, if he went to all the schools he allegedly went to, he went to five different schools, and he doesn't hold a degree in anything. He went to five schools. One we know didn't exist. And he couldn't have existed at these other schools and done all the work he supposedly did in other places and traveled around the world at the same time. Not at all. The guy is a spy. The guy is just being the fall guy, the patsy for this scheme, so that if Goldman Sachs got caught emailing code to somebody across the ocean, and I don't know why they would have to do that, but again, they're alleging that Alenikov did it. I made the tie between Alenikov, Teza, and Goldman Sachs. They're all three in bed together. Maybe they went to Wellesley College, too.
Well, dig it up. I wouldn't be surprised at all. They lead the world.
Now, this all sounds like circumstantial evidence, but the tie-in is the publicity firm they hired to explain away their shortcomings to the media. And, by the way, Mr. Ciparoni is on the board of directors. of youbet.com, a gambling website. So.
Yeah, as Don, when you were telling me that, remember I just kept asking you, well, okay, where's the porno side of this? There's got to be a porno guy here somewhere. Or maybe it's a woman. I don't know.
Well, that's what they were running out of that website that I reported called Model Mayhem when I discovered a house under Barack Obama's name and another alias that was out there. It's just one crime after wherever you turn and start looking at something, you just see a whole series of crimes being committed. And we're bringing the evidence out. The evidence is there. The evidence is there. They leave the trail.
Right. You've got all the players, too. I mean, right down to the other ones that are in the White House. I mean, those making the Chicago connection, all that stuff. And then, True, you, in fact, connected in Paulson with Gore and all that. You know, all these things just fit together, every single one of them.
Yes, it does. It really does. Well, gentlemen, we're about out of time. Want to give each of you an opportunity to wrap. And why don't you give out your information regarding your radio show and your website? That would be a good way, I think.
I don't know how to wrap.
Don't use any expletives, though.
It's got to be late. I'm going to get into the draft. I just sent you the Beyond Ponzi 3. It's rough yet. I'm still trying to flesh it out, but kind of see what you think. I sent it to both you gentlemen as well as CC copy to Drew Raines. I'll be talking, I'm sure, about this on Wednesday with him. Also, I don't know if I sent you the copy of that the lady who had the experience with this being. She drew it, her artist rendition picture of Pindar. They were trying to recruit her daughter, took her by force. She intervened and saw this individual, and she took her daughter back. So that's kind of blood-chilling. I sent that along to you as well, Don. I'll be posting some. Hopefully my website will be okay to do this. It's www.atrue. TRUE.com, a true Ott.
Okay, now I lost Dr. Ott. There he is again. We were getting some jitter on your line there.
See, that's what happens.
Are you sitting on a spinning washing machine by any chance? You know, is it on?
Or a horse?
It sounds more like it's on spin cycle and you're just trying to hold the lid down. You know?
Really? Well. That's one of my funniest shows is The Great Outdoors. I don't believe I need to catch a spin cycle.
Well, I can try to help you out here. I don't know. Well, okay. Now, your show airs Monday through Friday from, give the times.
7 to 9 p.m. Pacific time. Do the math. 10 to midnight on the East Coast.
That's right. Okay, and Dr. Mike Castle, you don't have a website, and you don't have a show, but you're on a lot of shows, and including Dr. Ott's show and Evident Footprints, like you are tonight.
Right, and I just want you to know I certainly do appreciate that, Don and True, for being honored. In fact, just to sit and listen to you gentlemen, in fact, brave and courageously, in fact, put this information out there that is – That actually transcends the tragedy that we've had just in the Gulf of Mexico. And that doesn't deminimize or demean anything there, but it's just that they are now exposed. And this is international broadcasting. And you said something about the people in Russia today, in fact, giving commentary, you know? Well, this goes out to them too. They, in fact, I believe, would be on our side, in fact, in saying we need to arrest and indict and jail these individuals for the rest of their normal life, unless somebody, in fact, has a better way of treating them, and maybe they don't want to stick around that long.
But, well, you know, I got to also say in closing, that piece that Al sent out, Mike and Don, remember, A lot of that with the want of funds, I know from my own sources that the Chinese are getting ready to do some strong arm foreclosing here, because it really right. does affect them with these Ponzi schemes are affecting the Chinese peasants and people as well as the communist leaders in China. We can't continue to snub the international community with these schemes.
Yeah, I agree.
Right, I agree.
That's been a recurring theme. You know, we had Paulson and Greenspan going to China trying to tell them what to do, what they were going to do. And then they went back again on another trip and tried to borrow $1 trillion and shortchange them on the interest. But you see, what do they need $1 trillion for? We don't see that money. That money disappears into thin air.
And if China had invaded Pakistan or India, like we invaded Iraq and Afghanistan, I think the people of America would be screaming mad about it, upset about it, and preparing for war, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, again, just to finish, and I am going to be on True's show this Friday. And I really appreciate that. And Don, I've got a date also down for you. I'm not certain what it is right now, but it's coming up. But I just want you to know, like 29th. Thank you. Yeah. I thoroughly enjoyed myself listening to this. It's the first time I've heard that, and I'll look forward to looking through what you're sending, True. And don't expect a lot of commentary from me, because the way you both mastered putting this together may protection and Godspeed be with you both, and be protected, and you have a good week. I appreciate being on your show, too.
Well,
thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mike. That. Thanks, Tom.
Let me just say there is so much. We're just scratching the surface here, really. We're talking off the top of our head the best we can recollect things found within the last 24 hours or within the last couple of days anyway. And it's when you start comparing all the markers that either show you that these are true statements being made by the various parties involved in these schemes, whether they're arrested or whether they're demanding the arrest of another person, when it doesn't feel right, when none of it makes sense, like the phony wellheads and the leaking wellheads, and we fixed it. Now it's leaking again. Oh, we got a bigger problem. Now we have to go back to fix it. And it might be August, maybe September when that comes around. Who knows? But we're trying our best to fix it. No, they're trying their best to cover their tracks. They're trying to destroy this earth, to disempower the people, steal their land, steal their possessions, and who cares? Because they have ways to launder it. They have ways of converting it into whatever they want, and that's all their intention is. Over and over again, we keep seeing the same things being done. And you can take any false flag event that we've looked at, and there is a pathway to the truth. And we've discovered it, and we've exposed it. Now let's see who has the courage out there in law enforcement to do something about it. And we can only add those names to the list of corrupt individuals if they do nothing about it. It's there. The evidence is there. And the mainstream media is not doing its job. They're not the media anymore. We are. We're not the alternative media. We are the media now.
Well, what I just sent to you, gentlemen, is to me the articles of indictment. I mean, there it is. Pass it on as you need to pass it on. Okay? Okay. Good night to you. Good night
to
both.
All right. Thank you both. And I'll see you next week, both of you. In the meantime, folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, also on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world, and on BlogTalkRadio.com. Special thanks to Seth Hendrick on the sound at BBS Radio. Also want to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night when my special guest will be none other than Christopher Holmes, Ph.D., direct from Canada. In the meantime, I wish all of you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.